Boker Tov. Today's daf is Daf Lamed Zayin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, and it's Lezecher Elias Nishmas Tzvi Aryeh Lev Ben Dov. Okay, so yesterday we found that there was a machlokas. It got a little bitter at the end, you know, but the question was that Rava claimed that indeed the halacha ultimately was that if the problem child who had gone ahead, I shouldn't say child because there really are a lot of children involved in, but the individual went ahead and took this woman before 3 months were up in a case where someone else had been married to her, not these complicated cases of the that we had here, then the halacha would be that, look, you know, even though normally we would say that he's got to give her a get and so on, but, you know, if it's going to make it impossible for the guy ever to marry her, so, you know, then this case of the chalitza over here, he would say, forget it, okay, if it's going to asser her to her new husband who's a Kohen, so then we don't demand that she get chalitza. So Rav Mesharshe got very upset with that, and he said, how could be mati or something like that? But anyway, the question is, what would be the halacha if a guy actually didn't do anything so terrible, and all he did was not get himself involved in that big problem, where there was a problem of chalitza? He just married somebody who was within 3 months of her original husband's death, or divorce, not divorce in this case, because we want to talk about a kohen, but, and he didn't wait the requisite time. So the halacha over there is that we force the guy to give a get meanwhile. That's what we learned yesterday. But what happens if he's a kohen? And if he gives her a get, he's never going to be able to marry her again. So, I mean, are we so heartless as to say because he took, I understand that by Yisroel, we say, let him give a get. And then, you know, if he's still in love after the baby is weaned 24 months later, so fine, at that point you can remarry her. But we can't say that to a kohen, that at that point you can remarry her because you gave her a get. So would we allow a special leniency over here for the kohen? That's the question. So hachagabi mu'uberet chavero, u'meneket chavero, who was married to a kohen, would we also force a get? Mi'ovid rabbanan takanta l'kohen olo? Would the rabbanan go easy on the kohen and say, okay, you know what, you just separate for the next 24 months, and then you go back again to her. Omar Leis, Rav Hoshaya said to Rav Ashi, what are you talking about? Of course not. The reason that we go easy on the Kohen in the case of the requiring Chalitza is because we have who to rely on, remember? Bishlama Hasam. So as we spoke about yesterday, there's a major question over here about whether we actually paskin this problem of needing to have 30 days for this, the viability proof, right? So over there, the Rabbanan argued on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Remember Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, he's got to get through 30 days. And the Rabbanan argued, and then they say, no, he doesn't have to get through 30 days. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, the machlokas that we're talking about is not where there was a crib death within 30 days. If there was a crib death within 30 days, then indeed, even the Rabbanan are more to look. I mean, the child ended up not being viable. He couldn't survive for 30 days. We're talking about where there's no reason for us to suspect that the child wouldn't have survived for 30 days, but he was in a car accident and he was killed within those 30 days. He seemed to be a perfectly normal infant. So there we have that machlokas. Again, this is the way one of the approaches the Gemara comes out. As I mentioned yesterday, Machlokas, whether we're talking about the entire 30 days, the 30th day, but whatever the case is, the Rabbanan argue on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, and they say, in the event that we have no reason to suspect, other than he didn't end up proving it because he ended up being in that car crash, but even though he didn't survive for 30 days, we have no reason to assume that he wouldn't have survived, and therefore, Afakav de Losha, he's still considered to be a Vlad Ma'alya. So then, if that's the case, so then we say to ourselves like this, this guy who married this Yavama that really needed Chalitza, why did she need Chalitza? She needed Chalitza because the child was in a car crash, right? But according to the Rabbanan, we still assume that there was no need for Chalitza, because of the fact that the brother who had died had left this viable child who was born, and he just didn't make it through that car crash. So we have who to rely on. And if we force the guy to give chalitza, then this kohen that married her is never going to be able to marry her again. So therefore, gabi eshet kohen, where we don't have the option to go a libet of Shimon Gamliel and to say, look, what does it hurt? Get chalitza just to be sure. What do you mean, what does it hurt? I'm going to lose my wife. So over there we say, okay, so you know what? Be semech on the rabbanon. Well, you have to go like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And she doesn't need chalitza. But in this case, somebody married a woman who was pregnant from another guy, or she was nursing a baby of another person. So then we don't have anybody to be semech on. Remember, the only other shita that we had over here was Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, he's even more machmir. Rabbi Meir, he says that even, forget about a kohen, he's never allowed to remarry her because anyway, we give him a knas. So according to Rabbi Meir, we're doing exactly what we need to do. We would throw out even a normal Yisrael, not a kohen, and we would say, sorry, buddy, you did something very wrong. Rabbanan asur chizuk l'divrayim, and therefore you're going to have to get rid of this wife and not be able to marry her. So of course, we'll say the same thing to the kohen. So who do you have to be semech on? The Rabbanan? The Rabbanan were the one who said that she needs a get. So show me where we have a shita that we can say, well, according to the shita X, we should go easy on the kohen. There is no shita X. And therefore, your attempt to, what were you thinking? We're makel on the kohen because, well, you know, poor kohen. Not that it was halacha, right? But poor kohen. So after all, the Beis Din is a bunch of reform rabbis. So they say, well, you can't do that to a poor man. You know, so forget about the halacha. That wasn't what it was about. It was about being semech on the Rabbanan, but over here we don't have anybody else to argue. Okay, now we have another question. Suppose the guy never took this woman to bed. He never went to the chuppah. All he did was, a guy goes over to this woman who is nursing someone else's baby from her previous marriage, or she's pregnant from someone else from a previous marriage, and he says to himself, gosh, you know, if I wait 24 months, this girl's going to fall in love with somebody else. Right now, she's happy with me. So what am I going to do? Wait 24 months? I'll never get her. So what does he do? He gives her kedushin. He says, listen, honey babes, I know that we're not allowed to get married. So how about I just give you kedushin now? Here's this pretty ring. You accept the kedushin and I'll see you in 2 years after you finish nursing. And then he takes the next flight out. So he's not even in the same town. And he runs away before the Beis Din can grab him and tell him you need to give a get. He runs out of town. Now, by running out of town, he's also made it pretty clear that he has no intention of consummating this marriage before the time is out. He just wanted to make sure that he got the girl. Okay, so what do we do over there? Suppose Kitcha b'toch shlosha. So suppose he goes ahead within 3 months of death, and he doesn't know if she's pregnant, or the other case. Pliga baravach v'rafra. So chadamar mishamtin alay v'chadamar arukei mistaye. Machlokas ravach et rafram. At this point, we don't know who said what, but we're going to find out. And one of them says, look, the very fact that he ran away and took the next flight out of town is sufficient indication to us that there really was no intent of consummating the marriage and that he really fully intends to stay away from her until the requisite time, whether it's 9 months for a pregnancy or 24 months for a nursing, whatever the case is. And therefore, you can rely on that. So Eruke means his escape, his taking off in a jet plane. That was good enough for him. And the other man, the Omer, says, look, I mean, we don't go according to circumstances. We have a halakha that we always force a guy to give a get. And therefore, even though in this case he only gave kedushin, and we don't know that he's going to consummate the marriage, he's going to have to give a get. Now, there was once an actual maisa, and that's how we found out who said once. There was once an actual maisa, and Raphram said, in terms of the psak, that the very fact that he took the next jet plane out of town is enough to protect us from any chashash that he is going to end up impregnating this woman. And because of that, we don't force him to give a get. So now we know who said what. Before we said, in this mindset, it turned out that it was Raphram was the one who said, you do not need to get a get from him. Okay, now let's move on to the next piece of the Mishnah. So the next piece of the Mishnah, we discuss in a very limited sense. That was the question of where we don't know. There was a baby, but it was a baby that was born after a Yavam who was not supposed to. What happened is he ended up with a suffix, and we'll see that actually it doesn't matter whether he's supposed to or not. Because what we found out over here is that the guy waited the requisite 3 months, and then there turns out to be a child at the end of just 7 months from then. And now we don't know if this child is a suffix, he's a bentishi, maybe a full gestation 9 month baby from the brother who had died, or he might be a 6 month plus, which is a 7 month baby, because remember that a yoledet l'shiv'a is yoledet l'mekuta'in. So then it can be just over 6 months, and then already it's called a 7 month gestation. And I don't know what to do. So over there we said that he has to divorce her because she might be a yevama who had a baby from before, and therefore he's sleeping with his brother's wife who did not need yibum. But the Mishnah said the child is completely kosher because b'mon nefshach. If he's the baby from the brother who died, obviously he's kosher. And if he's the baby of the Yavam, obviously he's kosher, because that meant that the brother really did require Yibam. And so he is a super kosher baby. He's a baby that was born out of a mitzvah in the Torah to marry a Yavam. Fine. So one way or the other, he's okay. Omale Rava, Lurim Nachman, I got a general question on this thing. I mean, is it not true that most women, most gestations, are 9 month gestations, right? So why don't we just rely on that rove, and then we don't get into all of this kind of stuff? So let's assume that this Yavama had a child from her first husband. She wasn't really a Yavama. And because of this, there is definitely a need to bring a Korban Chatas. And if he had another child with her, she would be a Vadei. That child would be the Vadei Mamzer, and so on. Why don't we say that it's a suffix? So Reb Nachman said, well, what do you mean? I could tell you that around here in my family, all of the girls give birth after 7 months. So it's only 7 month gestations. So Rava looks at Reb Nachman like, you know, what are you like? So you're telling me anecdotes? What does that have to do with the halacha? I mean, all of a sudden your family defines the nature of gestations? Like, that's an irrelevant statement. So what do you mean? Nashi titru aviruba di alma? So now you're redefining the international statistics of gestational periods, because you could tell me anecdotally that, well, I don't know. What is the meaning of that statement? Says Rav Nachman, what's the matter with you? You think I'm an idiot? What I'm telling you is that you seem to be assuming that we can ignore safely the miut of the 7 month gestation because it isn't something that occurs in normal times. I'm telling you, it does occur. Now, obviously, it's a small proportion, right? But nonetheless, we have another problem. You see, if this miyut wouldn't really be matzui, so then you could say, okay, fine. In the case where we need to be semich on this, let's be semich on it. The problem is that the norm, you want to go according to norms? Then let's talk about norms, baby. Because the norms are that in the event that you're talking about a normal gestational period, and she had actually conceived from her first husband before he died, then that would mean that, again, normally speaking, at the end of 3 months, a child is noticeable. And upon examination, we would have been able to tell that this woman is pregnant. Now, we did not tell that this woman was pregnant. It was the end of 3 months. The guy went ahead and he took her. Okay. And now you're telling me, well, 6 months later, here's the baby. So now you want to say, well, I mean, it's probable that it's the baby from the first husband and we have a rove. Let's just rely on that. And I say, since there was a violation of normal statistics here, you can forget about relying on the statistics because something is strange. Because kol hayoledet litisha ubranika l'shlish yamea. Every woman that gives birth at 9 months, you can detect the fetus at the end of 3 months. And over here, we did not detect the fetus at the end of 3 months. And because the Mishnah is talking about cases where the guy did what he needed to do, not where he violated necessarily. And therefore, we cannot rely on statistics where the statistics are not consistent. That's called itra leruba. There is something that has weakened the rove. So since rove itself is a statistical issue, then a violation of statistical norms weakens your statistical proofs, obviously. Therefore, says Reb Nachman, if you would have told me it's unheard of and it's a miut that, like, I don't know, well, we have to take into consideration something that never happens, I'm telling you it does happen. And once it does happen, then you're down to statistics. So you're telling me, well, you're not the rove. I agree. I never said that I was. But what I did say is something is rotten in Denmark. So therefore, we have to figure out what's going on over here. And therefore, we need to actually take very seriously the possibility that this is a 6 month out of a 7 month gestation from the Yovam. Wait a minute. Reb Nachman, what you just said makes no sense. You just said, kol hayoledet letish'a ubranika l'shlish yameh. Is that what you said? Did I mishear you? Every single woman that is involved in a 9 month gestation will have a detectable fetus at the end of 3 months. That's what you said. So then, what are we talking about over here? Did we find a detectable fetus? No. Then can we safely say this is not a ninth-month gestation? That's what you just said. You said every single woman in a ninth-month gestation has a detectable fetus at 3 months. So you just messed up the entire issue over here. Because according to you, in this case, we did not find a fetus. So then we have no choice but to say that indeed this fetus was actually conceived at the end of the 3 months. There's your proof. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean every. I was just trying to make an impact. I mean rove hayoledot. We also have a statistical, again, of course, not cold, but we have a statistical bias here that every woman, most that are involved in the tisha, I didn't mean every, I mean most women, we can detect the fetus. And since we didn't, it doesn't fit the statistics. And because of that, he's really rude. But that's what I meant. Obviously, I didn't mean every single woman. It's not a proof. Okay, so now we say the first child, meaning the child that we don't know, whether he is from husband number one, the deceased brother, or husband number two, in this case, the yova. So, look, you should know, when we say the first one is kosher, we mean he is super duper whooper kosher. Because he could even be a Kohen Gadol. You know, this family is a family of Kohanim, so we can take this kid and say his yichus is impeccable. And he can even be a Kohen Gadol. And the second one, oh man, if he stayed married and he did not go ahead and get rid of that woman, as we said he better, because, you know, any time that he sleeps with her, he's going to be over on possibility of Issacharis, of sleeping with his brother's wife, who was not Chayevus in Yibum. The second one, we're going to have to treat as a mamzer misafik, because we don't know, right? And maybe it's a mamzer of a child of an Eshet Ach, from a Yavam where it's Shelo B'Makom Mitzvah. Comes along Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov and makes a very strange statement. Ein mamzer misafik. Nope, there's no mamzer out of a suffix over here. What in the world is that supposed to mean? I mean, of course he's a mamzer misafik. What do you mean? We don't know whether he is the offspring of a man sleeping with this woman who was his brother's wife. And we have no idea whether he has a right to be sleeping with her as a Yavam or not. So that's a classic case of a Suffolk Mamzer. What are you saying? Ain't Mamzer me Suffolk. Of course he is. It's my karma. It doesn't even make any sense, no matter how you parse this. What in the world would he be saying? Very good question, especially when you're talking to blank screens with a lot of names on them and pretty pictures. So let's see. Whose picture is the prettiest picture? Well, I think out of everybody, maybe Calvin, or maybe a trademark, or maybe a spiral staircase. Those look pretty good. The Rebbe is always good because, after all, I mean, they sell those pictures in the stores, so I guess I should be very happy to have a Rebbe's picture. So, yeah, that's really exciting. Well, things are improving a bit. Okay. I see we've got these dead holdouts over here. Wowee. Look at this. Look at this. All right. I'll stop complaining, but it ain't easy. I can tell you that much. So, that's it. Thanks, Rich. 2 seconds of Richie, just to make sure that I know you're there. And now it's back to the porridge, is it? I hope there's lots of soubine of shibboleth shul in there. Okay. Anyway, so getting back now to what it is that Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying. Ein mamzer misafik. What is that supposed to mean, ein mamzer misafik? Says Abai, I'll tell you what he means. What he's trying to say is like this. The Rishon is ra'ui liot kohen gadol. Now, by the way, that sounds like it isn't saying very much, but it is. Because the halacha is that you cannot, as a matter of fact, Tosfos even asked this as a kasha, you cannot appoint a kohen gadol in the event that you do not know who his father was. So the case over there is you've got 10 Kohanim, and one of them was actually took this girl out to a hotel. She ends up having a kid. We don't know which one of those 10 Kohanim at the party took the girl to the hotel. The halacha is that that child, even though it was a party for Kohanim only, that child cannot be a Kohen Gadol. Because we are machmir, and we insist that a Kohen Gadol be miyuchas. We need to know who was his father. Now, if over here we don't know who his father was, why isn't this included in the takona of not allowing a Kohen Gadol who does not have a proper yichus? And Tosis explains the only time we talk about a proper yichus is when we're dealing with this type of illicit sex. So over there, the Rabbanan said, a kid born out of a Kohen party, that's not what we want to be the Kohen Gadol. But in this case, what do you mean? Why should he not be a Kohen Gadol? I don't understand. The fact that we don't know particularly which father, but each one of them was a tzaddik. This guy thought he was doing the mitzvah yibum. He had waited 3 months. The other one is a normal marriage with a coin. Why would he not be kosher? So there is an element of chiddush in saying when we say he's kosher, not just he's kosher, he's even kosher to be a Kohen Gadol. Okay, so that's an aside. But what is the explanation of what Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov was saying? In what case could we say that he is not a suffix? Of course he's a suffix. So what does it mean? Says Abaye, it means like this. The Rishon is kosher to be a Kohen Gadol. And the Sheni is, according to the Tanna Kamma, a Suffolk Mamzer. And a Suffolk Mamzer is Usser even B'Mamzeret. Reb Eliezer, right? Because, he's a Suffolk. So we're going to say to him, no, you can't marry that Mamzeret. Maybe you're not a Mamzer. Okay, so then I'll marry a normal girl. No, you won't. Maybe you are a Mamzer. So therefore, he cannot marry in either direction. And that's what the word Suffolk Mamzer means. Now, Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov says, therefore, no, he is not a mamzer misofik. He is a valai mamzer. So, ela valai mamzer, not that we really know that he's a mamzer, obviously, but what Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying is that a mamzer is always treated as if he's a valai mamzer, meaning that although he cannot marry a kshera because he may be a mamzer, but it doesn't matter that we don't know that he's definitely a mamzer. He could still marry a mamzeret anyway. Because according to Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, the chiddush is like this. That when we said that lo yavo mamzer b'kahal Hashem by definition means people who know their yichus. And they know that they're not mamzerim. The moment that you don't know, so then you're not called Kahal Hashem. And therefore, what's the problem of marrying a Mamzeret? The only Isser of the Mamzeret is the Isser Lavo B'Kahal Hashem. Therefore, says Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, when you said he's a Mamzer Misafik, you're killing the guy. Now he can't marry anybody. And that's not the halacha. because he is a mamzer, misofik, that gives him the din of a mamzer vadai, and he's allowed to marry a mamzer. That's what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would say. Rava says, no, it's exactly the opposite, man. The Chachomim over here, the Tanakama, was saying like this. Rishon wrote, Wiliyot Kohen Gadol. But the other one is a mamzer because of the suffix. He didn't say suffix mamzer, he said mamzer misuffix. Mamzer misuffix means that he is definitely a mamzer because of the suffix. Meaning what you said was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's opinion is actually the Tanakhama's opinion. And therefore they were saying that he is a mamzer because of the suffix. And he's allowed to marry a mamzeres. Whereas on the contrary, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was the one who was saying that there's no such thing as a mamzer misuffik. There's only a suffik mamzer. Because saying he's a mamzer misuffik means that he's treated as a vadai mamzer and he's allowed to be married to a mamzeret because of the suffik. And that is not true, says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Actually, there is no such thing as a vadai mamzer misuffik. He is a suffik mamzer, and therefore he is also usur on a mamzeret. Okay? So we have two possibilities. A machlokas about who says what. That's the whole machlokas over here. But we only have two very simple possibilities. Is someone who may have come from a union of an Issacharis, but we don't know, is he called a mamzer misuffik? Which means we give him a din of a mamzer because of the suffik and he's allowed to marry a mamzeret? Or is he called a suffik mamzer? In which case, he has to be treated l'chumra in two directions. He cannot marry a mamzeret, but he also cannot marry a ksheira. That's the machlokas. Now, as to who said what, that's a sub-machlokas. We don't know. Abaye claims, and we'll see why they argue. Abaye claims it was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov who was mekel, and he said that even a mamzer that comes out of a suffik is a vadei mamzer. And the Rabbanan said, no, you have to be machlon in both directions, and he's only a suffik mamzer. And according to Rava, it was the other way around, that it was the Tanakama who said that the second one is treated lakula, that he's allowed to marry a mamzer, because he's treated as a vadei mamzer mitzad this suffik. And according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he is a suffik mamzer, which is a chumra. Vadai mamzer misuffik is a kula. Okay, now, why would Abaye and Rava argue about this issue? Why does one take the approach? I mean, there's nothing that is clearly indicative in the language that we can be hanging our explanation on. So why are they arguing? It's very simple. They're arguing because of Rabbi Elazar, not to be confused with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Remember that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov has another name. Remember his other name? Eliezer Kav Vinaki. Why is he called Kav Vinaki? Because he does not appear very often in the Mishnayos, but every time he says something, it's always absolutely clean, and it is 100% reliable halacha. So, that means, depending on how we interpret Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's statement over here, that is going to be the halacha. So that ends up being the thing that we're worried about over here. Because Rabbi Elazar Kavanaki, Rabbi Elazar, he said that the halacha is, and this is basically a Mishnah. So Rabbi Elazar says in the Mishnah in Kiddushim, we were talking about over there, Asara Yuchasim. So we have 10 different types of Yichusim that came up from Bavel, and the Mishnah goes through all of them, and it talks about different sets. And each one of those sets are perfectly okay to intermarry. So set number one. So set number one is Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. They're allowed to marry one into the other. Set number two includes the Leviim again, and the Yisraelim, and Kohanim Chalalim, and Gerim, and the Shichrurei Avadim. They can also all marry one into the other. They can't marry the Kohanim in this case because of the problem of Znus and so on. Now, there's another group. That group includes Gerim, Avadim Shuchrorim, Mamzerim, Netinim. Remember the Netinim were the Givonim that we have the various Gezeris on them from Moshe Rabbeinu and from David that gave them a din of Havonim according to Rashi, or they're just considered to them non-Kahal. That's a big Machlokas, which we're going to get into much later in the Masechet. And those are, together with Shtuki Vasufi, are Mutarim Lavozebeze. What is a Shtuki? A Shtuki is a case of a child who says, hey, Dad, and Mommy says, shh. Uh-oh. So that means we don't really know who Daddy is. So that's the case of the Shtuki. The case of Asufi is where we found this baby in a basket somewhere, you know, with a little note, please take care of my baby. And no crucifix, but no mug and David. So anyway, so we don't know what the yichus of this child is. And obviously we're talking Makom where it's Rov Yisroel. And the question over here is maybe he's a mamzer. And so somebody wanted to dump the baby so people wouldn't know. So whatever. The point is that all of those cases are, it says in the Mishnah, are also mutorim lavo zebezeh, because over there, since they're not called Kahal Hashem, so they're mutor lavo zebezeh, because they didn't start off a Yisrael miuchas. Okay. Now, Rabbi Elazar says, no, that's not true. The cases of the sets which are vadai, yes, they are allowed to be lavo zebezeh, because we know who they are. But the cases that are basically sveikot, and we don't know whether they are mamzerim or not, what are the suffix cases? Well, the shtuki, the asufi, and the kuti. Now, the kuti normally would have not been a suffix. The reason that the kutim ended up being sveikot was because the kutim, remember, rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh. And because of that, they did not accept the Gezeres Shava about Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron. So they never believed in this din of giving money to a woman and being able to marry her, giving a shtar to a woman, being able to marry her. So therefore, if somebody was Mekadesh a woman, and then someone else came along and actually took her and consummated the marriage, they said the second marriage is the only marriage, not the first one. But that would mean that any children from that ostensible marriage are actually mamzerim. And that kind of gisha to the din of marriage obviously is going to create innumerable issues where we're going to have suffix of yichusim. So therefore, we consider the entire body of the kusim to be the same idea, suffix mamzerim, just like a shtuki and an asufi. So that was the machlokas. Rebbe Elazar. Now, Rebbe Yehuda came along, and Rebbe Yehuda said, well, we paskin like Rebbe Elazar in this case. And then, remember that Rebbe Yehuda used to learn in front of Rav, so he was quoting Rav, and then when Rav died, he went to learn with Shmuel, and Rebbe Yehuda reported that when I came to Shmuel, and I told him what I just said, that the halacha is like Rebbe Elazar, Shmuel said to me very sarcastically, he said, well, I know of a braisa that explains the Asara Yuchasin, and over there, Hillel says, that means that this Mishnah was predicated on Hillel. Hillel Azakin, I think, is a darn good basis for a halacha, don't you? And Hillel said, Asara Yuchasin, Olumi Bava, Kohani, Levi of Yisraeli, is set one. The Halali Geri Haruri, and then we have the ones that are sveikas, the mamzeri, netini, shtuki, ve'asufi. And all of the sets are allowed to marry one into the other, which means that he's saying that suffik mamzerim can marry one into the other. And you're trying to tell me that the halakha is like Rabbi Elazar, where Rabbi Elazar is arguing on Hillel HaZaken, and Rabbi Elazar is, this is not Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, this is Rabbi Elazar, who's saying that the sveikos are asurim levozebezeh. So now the question is, do you hold like Rav or do you hold like Shmuel? That explains the halachas between Abaye and Rava. Because Abaye says, look, Shmuel said the halachas is like Hillel. So therefore, I have to work it out that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who is Kavanaki, is not going to argue on Shmuel, because if he argues, arguing in other words on Hillel, because if I do, then we're going to end up with a contradiction in the halacha. On the one hand, the halacha is like Hillel, and on the other hand, you're telling me the halacha always goes according to Rabbi Eliezer Kavanaki, right? So in order, to make it that there's no contradiction between one halacha, so therefore I said, look, if I'm going to come along and explain what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov said when he says, there's no mamzer misafik, then obviously I'm going to explain it in a way that works out according to Hillel, not according to Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, what does he mean? He means he is not a suffik mamzer. He is a vadai mamzer because of the suffik, and therefore it's a kula. Like Hillel said, kulam mutarim lava zebezeh. Because what's the problem? Maybe I'm a mamzer and she's not, or maybe vice versa. What difference does it make? The bottom line is, since your yichus is unclear, then it's not being bal kahal Hashem. That's all. So what's the problem? I wanted, therefore, to explain Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov in a way that's consistent with Halacha Libet Shmuel. Masha Einkein, Rava was following Rav. And Rav says that the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, and not like this Brisa of Hillel. And because of that, he wanted Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov to work out according to the Halacha the way he sees it, in order, from the way he sees it, that there should be no contradiction of Yochasa. And therefore, he made Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov be the one who was saying that you cannot marry into one another if it's a suffolk. And therefore, what was Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov saying? Ein mamzer misafik. There is no such thing as the kula of a vadai mamzer misafik. On the contrary, there has to be the chumrah of not marrying one into the other, which is consistent with Reb Eliezer, which is consistent with the way Rav paskened, and therefore we now understand clearly what happened over here. Omer Abaya, look, I can prove to you that Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov says exactly what I'm saying, and that what he's telling you is that there is no such thing as a suffik mamzer. There's only a vadai mamzer misuffik. That's what I'm saying. And he's allowed to marry a mamzeres. I'll prove it to you. D'tanya, Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. Imagine a situation where a guy goes around sleeping with any woman that he feels like it. He has no idea, after a couple of years he stopped keeping records, so now he's no longer going around the bar bragging. We have no idea who he's been sleeping with. We have no idea who's impregnated, or a woman who goes around just sleeping with anybody, you know, and she's got like many lovers. She's got no idea who got her pregnant. Eina yodat me'eze man kibla. So what do you think the situation in the world is going to be if this kind of behavior goes on? Now, what's going to happen is that a father is going to be marrying his daughter, a brother is going to be marrying his sister. They have no idea that they're related, because everybody's been sleeping around, and therefore we have no way of tracing Yehuzim. And therefore, nitmale, now here's the crucial word, nitmale kol olam kulo mamzerim. This is going to fill the entire world with mamzerim. And that's why the Torah told us to be very careful. Al techalel et bitchala haznota. Don't let your kids get into prostitution. It may be a good business, but it's a bad business. Because lo tizne ha'aretz u'mal'ah ha'aretz zima. So what does that mean? It means u'mal'ah ha'aretz zima means it will become filled with mamzerim. Now, what do you mean filled with mamzerim? You just said that you don't know who's who, and you're worried that a father may end up marrying his daughter and a brother man that may, maybe. And yet we find that he's calling this mamzerim. Why doesn't he say Sveikes Mamzerim? Because he holds like I say. Every suffik mamzer is, for all intents and purposes, a vadai mamzer, and therefore allowed to marry anybody else who's got these Sveikes, because the Kaal Hashem doesn't include the Sveikes. You see? Says Rava, yeah, I see, but I don't see what you see. I see that the word at the end of this pasuk is not about mamzeres. The word about this pasuk is zima. Now, I know people like to have their own explanation of what Zima means, but, you know, that's all projections, depravity, sickening, perverted. But you know what Zima means? Zema. What is this kid? That's what it means. So all that Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, all he was saying is, which would make the world filled with Zemas, which are Suffolk Mamzerim, which is exactly what I'm saying. And that therefore would have to be machmir because it's suffik and suffik mamzeres. Now the Rambam has a beautiful little discussion on this halacha, in which he says, "Uminayin ani omer." Where do we get the idea? It's one of his very sweet, like where he explains, "I'm going to tell you something that you're going to say. Well, how do you know? I'm going to tell you how I know. So how do I know that someone who does not know his yichus, right? Okay, so he's been found in a basket. So now he wants to marry someone. So how do I know that the Bezdin doesn't say to him, listen, buddy, you can't marry anybody, because since you don't know who your relatives are, if you're going to go marry a girl, how do you know she's not your sister? So you can't get married to anybody. How do I know that that's not true? I'll tell you how I know. Because, and he brings this, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that it says that the world will become full of Zima, right? How will the world become full of Zima if no one will be able to get married unless they can prove their yichus? So obviously, Bezdin does not insist that people prove their yichus. And therefore, indeed, people will marry and the world will become full of Zima, because we won't know who's who. Beautiful. Anyway, so continues the Gemara. Now, another thing that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov said that is very similar to this. Yeter al kein, Omer Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, a man should not marry a woman in one area and then go to Hawaii and find himself another wife, and then go to New Zealand and find himself another wife, and go around singing, I got a girl in every port, honey, honey. You're not supposed to do that. Why? Because Shema Yizdavgu Zelazet, because the kids may not know, and it'll turn out that a nimtza ach noset achoto. So even if, forget about just sleeping around, which I said before, really can confuse people, but don't even raise different families, because they may end up not having the slightest idea that these two families share a common father. Now the Gemara asks from the Maisa that we had back in Yuma, remember? That when Rav would go, the Gersa that we had there, which we said was correct, was Darshayish instead of Darshir. So when Rav would go to Darshayish, that was a remez we said to the Beis HaMikdash, Misha Dar B'Shayish, which is also in the next case, Shach Netziv, Shochein Netziv, the Shechina, which ends up being Shochein. Anyway, so when Rav went to Darshayish, he would always put up a note on the bulletin board, anybody who wants to be a wife for a night should please let me know. So then he would not want to be without a wife. So he would take volunteers and marry them for the night. And Reb Nachman, when he came to Shach Netziv, he would do the same thing. He would send out an announcement, anybody who would like to marry me for the night is welcome. So man havi l'yuma. Now, how in the world could they do that? Isn't that exactly what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was saying about marrying a woman in every port? And then we would have the children marrying each other and not having any idea who daddy is. Says, well, what do you mean who daddy is? Everybody knows who daddy. You think that a child will be a child of Rav and Reb Nachman and they're not going to be famous? Oh, this is a child of Rav. A child of Rav. Wow. I'm also a child of Rav. Nice to meet you, sister. But he's certainly going to end up marrying her because everybody's going to know exactly who she is. So why would there be a problem of marriage? You must note this, again, is somewhat different values than the current Jewish world seems to hold. Fine. But you can understand. Yes, this is Reb Chaim's daughter from the night that he stayed here. This, we don't have that kind of issue, right? But okay, so then there wouldn't be any kind of problem. Wait a minute. How are you allowed to do that? Isn't the halacha of tva'u alina sevenit paisa? If somebody offers marriage to a woman, then she cannot get married right away, because we're afraid that the stimulation of just the thought of the fact and the excitement that somebody's offered her marriage and so on, that is going to stimulate a moment of dam, which is called dam chimud, that at times the excitement, sexual excitement itself, can trigger a hormonal fluke of a small bleed, and that will make her usher. So you have to wait Shiva Nikiyim in the event nowadays, full Shiva Nikiyim, and therefore it's not going to do them much good, because once they found this woman and they offer her marriage, she's not going to be able to get married, because she has to wait Shiva Nikiyim. No, they sent ahead and they put up a notice on the bulletin board a couple weeks before. So then the woman that was volunteering to be the wife for the night, there for the number of days that he was staying, she would already have been mitaharet herself and would have kept the shiva nekiyim. So they sent a shliach before to let people know. And therefore, there was no problem. Or I could say that maybe this whole issue, that there's a lot of different approaches to what this is coming to answer, the Yibay Seima. Is it coming to answer the problem of the shiva nekiyim? Is it coming to answer the problem of people not knowing who their parents are and therefore marrying a sister? Is it coming to be addressing both of the issues? You'll see in a moment that it's not very clear what it means to be answering. The Rabbanan over here, Rav Nachman, they didn't really want to sleep with these women. They just wanted them to be available. So Yichude bi'amahu d'miyachtilahu, they would just be misyached with them. If that's what it means, it's a big problem, because then it can't be explaining the Dam Chimud issue, because you're not allowed to be misyached, unless it just means Yichude bi'alma, they just wanted to have them available, but that's not the Pashtas. So the Pashtas, what it means over here, is that we're addressing the issue of the children. Whatever we're going to do about the issue of Dam, we have to still do, obviously. But over here, they didn't intend to have children because they never intended to have any relations. They were not going to consummate these marriages. So why did they want these women? Because, since you want to be able, if you so desire to have a woman, so once you're in that matzav, so then you don't feel deprived. The Yetzer Hara doesn't get hold of you, and therefore you won't be in a matzav of having your Hurim Royim or whatever. So you need to have a pot besalo.
You, are we forced to say that the actual Yichud
is
supposed to
be... I just said that's a possibility. But in any event, I mean, obviously you would still end up with the question, how is it pot besalo if you don't have the option of marrying her, if it's coming to address that, right? So you're still going to have to worry about it. Unless, again, pat pesalo means that you ultimately, if you end up being turned on to somebody, you could always take her home and make her your wife. These are funny pshatim, but every pshat that you have is going to have to deal with this issue. So the most straightforward thing is we're talking about the problem here only of the children. Tana, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer, lo yisa adam ishto. There's another problem here, that you should not marry a woman and have in mind that you're going to be divorcing her at the end of a certain amount of time. So basically, you're getting married for a short while. Mishum shenemar al tacharosh al reyecha. Don't sit there making plans. So the literal meaning over here is that it's a euphemism for sleeping with a woman, tacharosh. So don't sow. What is it? Tacharosh, harisha, plow. So don't plow into your friend. You're doing evil to him, and he's relying on you. So she thinks that you really married her, and you love her, and you're keeping her, and all you want to do is use her. That's terrible. Obviously, over here, they said up front. I mean, if you'd say up front, that who wants to be my wife for the night or for the week, that's something else. Now, this is the fascinating piece. What is the din of the Yerusha? Because over here, this Suffolk ben Rishon, and Suffolk ben Cheney, he's in a very interesting position in terms of inheritance. So what happens over there? Suppose the Suffolk and the Yavam are both coming to court to be able to decide who gets the money from the dead brother. So the Yavam claims, well, what do you mean? I'm the Yavam, and the dead brother is mine. Because that's what it says. The Torah is giving me a din of the Yoresh and a Yoresh of a double sect, whatever. His chelek together, the other chelek. Okay, so I get it. But the infant says, excuse me, I happen to be his son, and you are an interloper, and I am the only heir, and therefore I get this entire Yerusha. So off you go. So basically, the Suffolk is saying, I'm the son of the mace, and the Yavam is saying, no, you are my son, and you don't get a penny. So therefore, since we are obviously not going to be able to figure this out, it's called Momen HaMutal B'Suffolk. In this case, no one was in possession. And the halach is that Momen HaMutal B'Suffolk, you have to be cholik. Okay, next case. Let's keep our cases separate because each one is going to address a different problem. So case B, you've got the Suffolk and the children of the Yavam who are now coming to go and get the neches of the brother who died. So over here, the Yavam died some years ago. The court was taking a long time getting together the chalukah on the dead brother, or the Yavam died 2 days after, whatever. And he dies before we gave him the Yerusha of the dead brother and before we split it. So now his children and the Suffolk are both now coming to take possession. So the Suffolk says, gentlemen, out you go. That guy, meaning himself, I am the son of this brother who died, years ago, and I'm taking all of these nechasim. You don't get anything because you're not related to him. You're nephews. Why should you get anything? I'm his only son. And the sons of the Yavam claim, no, you're not. You are our dear brother. And because of that, you get a piece of the action the same way we all do. And we can split equally. There's three brothers now. You get a third. What happens over there? So, So here, the Talmidim wanted to say, look, we've got a Mishnah that describes exactly this situation. This Mishnah is later on in our own Masechet over here. So what happened over there is we had a case, again, where the woman was either a grusha or she was an almana, and she also had this problem that she had a baby afterwards, after waiting, that was 6 months. She wasn't sure if it was Ben Rishon or Ben Sheni. In this case, both of her husbands, husband number one and husband number two, had other kids. And comes along now this kid, and he wants to be Yorish. So it says over there, look, he can never be Yorish any of them, because anybody that he tries to be Yorish will say, excuse me, you are not a member of our family, you're a member of the uncle's family. Each family, not the uncle in this case, the first husband's family. So each family will be doche him to the other one, right? Because he's always a Suffolk. Since he's always a Suffolk, the sons that are Vadai, they're the ones that are considered to be Muchzik. If he wants to get any of their money, he's got to bring a Raya and a Motzi Mechaver, all of a Raya, because he's being Motzi, because they are long known to be the children of the mace. Masha'in Cain, but they can get together and they can be Yoresh him, because if he dies, so then he has to be inherited by his brothers. Who are his brothers? Both families have equal claim to being his brothers. So the brothers of both family will split his estate, the Suffolk estate. So this is the same case, right? Except in reverse, because there in the Mishnah, they said, you got to prove that you're our brother and then you can get something. So over here, we say the same thing, except in reverse. He says to them, look, you've got to prove, in this case, I'm definitely, for sure, even though I'm a Suffolk, Memanavshach, I'm definitely a Yorish, because if I'm the only son of the brother, then I'm the only Yorish. And if I am, as you claim, the son of your father, the Yavam, I'm still a Yorish, because I'm still getting one third of this, right? Masha'in Cain, the Yavam's sons, they can't say that we're definitely Yoresh, because the dead brother may, in fact, be the father of the Suffolk, in which case that he has a son, and that son gets the entire estate. So therefore, we seems to be exactly the same thing. He can say to them, look, I don't want to give you a penny, so bring proof first that you are my brothers. So Rav Mesharsha said to them, not true. It's not the same. Because in the case of the Mishnah that you brought, we have a situation where they are Vada Yorshim, and he is a Suffolk Yoresh. But in this case, you're right to say, I understand what you're thinking. You're saying that the Suffolk is definitely a Yoresh, right? And the other ones, because Mamanavshach, if he's the son of the dead brother, he gets the whole thing. If he's the son of the ostensible Yavam, he gets one third. So therefore, he is a Vadai. That's what you're claiming. But you're wrong. The reason that you're wrong is because when you have a claim that is a mamonavshach claim, that's not considered to be a definite claim. The court will look at each claim separately and decide it. So what's going to be? You're going to come along and you're going to say, gentlemen, this estate is entirely mine because I think I'm the son of that one. The court will say, well, okay, let's discuss that. This is Momon Amuto Besafik, is we don't know. It's basically given half to you and half to the family of the Yavam, which are these two brothers. That's the way we'll split it. But wait, he says, but I'm also one of the brothers, maybe. Oh, okay, says the court. Let's consider that claim. Okay? So on the basis of that claim, what we can do is we still have a Momon Amuto Besafik. Okay? And that Momon Amuto Besafik, we're going to split again between you and the other two brothers. We'll get into the details of how this plays out in a little bit of time. But the important thing that Rav Sharsha was machadish over here is that a Beis Din does not process claims because of mamonavshach. It has to have a claim that you know what you're talking about. If you don't know what you're talking about, then each step in the determination of the case is going to be defined by the normal way that we will deal with sveikas. And over here, since both of them are suffix, it does not apply. You want to learn it to the Mishnah, that it's like the Mishnah over there. I'll tell you which part of the Mishnah to compare it to. You've got to look at the actual Mishnah, as the Bach explains. Idam yalam asnisa, you know what it's like? Hadamya to the case of the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam. Shabo lachalok b'nichse Yavam gufa. This is case C. In case C, they are looking at the father who died, not the mace, the brother who had died before. Now we want to be machalik them. Over here, the Yavam died. So in that case, obviously the brothers will say, now listen here, we don't think you're our brother at all. You bring a raya that you're a brother, and then you can get a chelek in this. That's the case in the Mishnah, because over here the sons of the Yavam are definitely Yorshim. The one who is a suffix, maybe, maybe not. But that would mean that the ones that are vadai are considered to be muhzakim and hamotzi michaveiro olavaraya. You want to take a part of the action, prove that you're a brother. Now let's take a look at case D. Suffix, gentlemen, I'm going to try to get up to the Mishnah so that we won't have the problem of trying to do an entire daf. So we can get ahead, right? So if you don't mind, we can easily get up to the Mishnah. Just hold on to your hats over here. So if we have the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam in case D, now they're coming to argue about who gets rights to the Yavam's things, okay? But in this case, it's not like the other case. In this case, it's after the Yavam already took a piece of the action of his brother who died. So remember what we said in case number A, that in the case number A, the child, who may be a child of the deceased brother, or may not, he may be a child of the Yavam, and the Yavam are fighting in court over the Yerusha of the dead brother. So what did we decide over there? It's Momon Amutal B'Safek. The child gets half, the Yavam gets half, right? Now, in this case, after that takes place, some years later, and Bosa Depolig Yavam B'Nichse Misna, the Yavam dies. Now, the children of the Yavam say, okay, you want to inherit our father? Bring proof that you're a son. If not, you don't get anything. He says to them, the suffix says to them, okay, listen here, boys. Loosen up a bit. Because if you're going to tell me that, then I'm going to tell you, okay, very nice. Are you saying I'm not your brother? So in other words, whose son am I? You're a son of that guy that died years ago. Okay. The guy who died years ago left an estate of $100 million, which your father stole from me and took $50 million. Now you're admitting that I'm a son of that guy. I'm the only son of that guy, and I'm suing for the $50 million that your father stole from me. So which way do you want to go? Right? So therefore, he says to them, listen, Manav Shaykh, what would you like to do? If I'm your brother, then let's split the money in this family. Okay? If I'm not your brother, I want my half of what your father stole when the court decided. So havili pagda polaga vulchan ba'adoy. Now, obviously, this is going to depend on who was richer, right? How much money do we have now in this new Yerusha from the Yavam? Maybe one third is worth more than half of the Yerusha that he's getting back. Okay, fine. But the bottom line is that he should be able to have this taina. And here, actually, we have a machlokas about what the din is. A very important machlokas. Reb Abba Amar Rav says, in this case, kam dina. And Reb Yirmiyah says, in this case, hodar dina. So the case over here would be, being as we already went through the original suit some years ago, the court decided that we're going to split the estate of the dead brother between Moshe and Del. We're going to split the Yerusha between the Yavam and the child, right? That's what we said. The question is, does this new case, years later, open up a can of worms about that original judgment? Because over here, it has direct impact on the tainas of the Yavam's children. That is a machlokas. Do we reopen cases which were decided on the basis of Mamon HaMoto B'Safek because of the fact that now they create new tainas in a new setting? Or do we say, look, Mamon HaMoto B'Safek, when it's paskind, is paskind. This is what the court awarded. We don't go back and say, well, now I want to reopen the case. You can't reopen the case because the brothers say something. That does not change the reality. And the reality was that it was Mamon HaMoto B'Safek, and that stands. So that's called kamdina. The other approach of Reb Yirmiyah is that, look, if contextually it doesn't make sense for it to stand, then we will actually reverse the original psak, because now these brothers are claiming that you're not our brother. Okay, so then we will reverse it. That's called hadar dina. We'll twist it around, meaning we'll reverse it. So wait, this is a very interesting machlokas here, because it seems to be an application of an important question that we know well, that from the Tanoim. This is the machlokas of Admon and the Rabbanon. I mean, this is not really Reb Abba and Reb Yirmiyah, because this is the Mishnah itself in Ksuvos. We're over here. It's a fascinating case, really beautiful case, guys. Listen to this case. A guy had a field, and his field was surrounded by other fields, but he had an access road that was part of his rights to the field. Now, the problem is he went overseas. He was overseas for 10 years. He comes back, and he discovers that his access road has disappeared. It's totally overgrown. There's not the smallest sign of where it was. He's got no witnesses and no papers. Everyone agrees that he definitely had an access road, but he has no idea where his access road is. So now what happens is like this. He goes, Mishalach l'medinat hayam. He loses his access road. So Admon says, fine. So let him get the smallest possible access road. He says, no, it was like a 2-mile road, and I had like all kinds of nice trees along it and so on. No, he can only get what everybody agrees he's got to get, the shortest possible access road. So Yelech Biktzara. The Chachomim says, what do you mean Yelech Biktzara? Let him buy an access road, whatever it costs, $100 million, $100 million. They can say to him, you want an access road? That's $100 million. But how am I supposed to get to my field? Well, what's the problem? You can always take a jetpack, can't you? So go fly. What do we care? So either Yikach lo derech bebei amana, or Yifrach bavir, go fly through the sky. It's not our business how you get to your field. So now, let's understand the case, because we immediately asked over there, this doesn't make any sense. Isn't Admon right that the guy definitely has a minimal road? He once had a road, so why can't he get the road? So Rav Yehuda said that what Rav explained in the Mishnah is that actually the properties around his field were owned by 4 separate people. So everyone says, sorry, buddy, it wasn't in my property. It must have been in Joe's property. He goes to Joe. Joe says, nah, I never had any access road through my property. Why don't you go to Terrence? Terrence said, I never had any back. Anyway, so as you can see, obviously, he's got no way to get his property back. wait a minute. But then, so how could Admon possibly say that he does get the shortest possible road? He shouldn't get any road. And Rava explained, you don't understand what Rav was saying. Rav was saying that originally this field with the access road was surrounded by four separate fields, meaning owned by four separate people. They are currently, have been bought out by a fourth guy. So now the fourth guy owns all of them. That's what happened over here. So he's got over here, you have to depend, understand what the case is. If you have four people who are currently the owner, and obviously if they went ahead and they got four owners that were there before, and then that would be not a machlokas. Of course, everybody's made a, that each one can come and say, listen, I don't know that. Why am I responsible? For sure, that was never the machlokas of Admon and the Rabbanan. What Rav was talking about is that there are currently one owner who bought out all of the four people that were there. So Admon says, okay, so then what the guy can say to this new owner is, listen, buddy, one way or the other, I have a path to my field. Okay, I want my access road. And the Rabbanan says, no. Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because the guy can say to him, listen here, buddy, let me tell you something. If you shut your fat mouth, I'm ready to make a deal. So how about I sell you an access road for $100,000? You'll say that's highway robbery. Well, you can keep fighting if you want, but if you keep fighting, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you don't shut up, I am going to go to the original people that I bought from, and I am going to give back this shtar. And I'm going to say, listen, I never wanted to buy property that's got claims against it. I want my money back. Take your fields back. And then you go ahead and sue the four people and see how far it gets you. Because if I return it, you don't have a claim. They'll throw you right out of court because you don't know who you're trying to sue. And then you're not going to get any access road. So you decide what you want. You want to make a deal with me or you want to try fighting it with the original owners? So that seems to be the machlokas over here. Rabbi Abba, he was going according to Rabbanan, and Rabbi Yirmiyah was going according to Admon. So basically, that's the question. Hadar dinar or kam dinar? Do we say that once we had, that in other words, you no longer had a claim, right? Initially, you wouldn't have had a claim. And now, you've got some guy that bought it all. Well, we don't go back and say, now a guy got it all, now let's go reopen the claim. There's no reopening the claim. You had no deed and you had no right to legal, to any kind of legal recourse. That doesn't change. That's called kamdina. Masha ain't kain. The other approach would be kadma. And there we would say that no, hadar dina, you do have a right. Amalacha Rabbi Abba, not true. I disagree. I say that what I said works even according to Admon, because Admon was saying over there, because since he said, the Amalei Memonavshach, he says, look, you have to decide what you're telling me. You have four fields that you bought. Memonavshach, I do have a field by you. But in this case, Mi'ika L'Memar Hachi, where is the Memonavshach? In this case, when the guy is claiming, it's a completely different Mamanavshach. In this case, the guy is claiming, you own this piece of land. It's a piece of land that encircles a field. In this piece of land, I definitely have a claim. Yes or no? Yes. Thank you. In the other case, your Mamanavshach is, well, either I'm the son of the dead guy, the original deceased brother, or I'm the son of the Yavam, who's your father. That, what is your claim, man? Well, I don't know what my claim, oh, you don't know what your claim is? Very good. Let's go to court about a guy who doesn't know what his claim is. And then we'll go through the steps about each one of those not knowing what your claims is. And we'll determine what to do. Okay? So it's not the same at all. We're talking about the quality of a claim. Rabbi Yirmiyah would say, on the contrary, I'm going, even I'll leave it to Rabbanan, that we will actually reverse the original decision. Because the only reason the Rabbanan said this is as they explained. It's because of the guy's threat. It's because the guy said, look, if you don't shut up, I'm going to give this to the original owners. So then that means you always have that possibility. Because if not, but over here, he's got no way out of it. They have to deal with it There's nothing that they can do to change this guy's claims of a Maman of Shach, and therefore we will deal with it. Fine. Now let's talk about case E. Case E is where the Suffolk comes together with the Yavam, and now they are claiming the grandfather's estate. Now this grandfather had two sons, one of whom died way time ago, and that was the original brother who died. And the other brother who was the Yavam and had this baby at the end of the 9 months, which wasn't clear whether it was 9 months from the first or 7 month baby from the second. So now we've got another can of worms, because now that grandpa has died, little boy Blue, who is the Suffolk, says, grandpa, poor grandpa. My father's father and I am the only son, and my father had half of this estate, and now I get that half. Now, of course, the other brother's sons say, you are just a brother. Our father was the only surviving brother, and therefore you get a third. That's all that you get, just like we, the two of us. You're a brother like all of us. So here's what each one says. The Suffolk says, I'm the son of the original brother who died, and therefore I get half of grandpa's estate. The Yavam says, no, you are my son, and you don't get a penny from the grandfather's estate. You are just one of my children. So in this case, the Yavam is a Vadai Yoresh, because one way or the other, he is supposed to be getting something from grandpa, right? And the Suffolk is a Suffolk, and Ein Suffolk Motzi Midei Vadai. In this case, we cannot take anything away from the Yavam. Okay, let's talk about case F. The Suffolk and the children of the Yavam are now coming together to split grandpa's estate, and in this case, the Yavam died before his father died. So now both brothers are dead, grandpa dies, and now the Suffolk wants a piece of the action. And he says, well, now that grandpa has died, half is mine because I was the son of the brother who died long ago. The children of the Yavam say, no, you're our brother. You get a piece of the action. And so we'll give you one third, which is what you deserve like the rest of us, right? That's what we want. What happens? Well, what happens in this case is like this. First of all, we've got the first half, okay? Palga de Kamodi Lahu. So the Suffolk agrees that half of grandpa's estate is certainly supposed to go to the Yavam. Okay, so let's take that out of the picture. We'll get back to it. So that part, forget it. That goes into the claim of the Yavam, okay? Then he takes the other half, because they are also... He's giving them half because he's saying, yes, you get a right to the half because your father, after all, was a brother to my father. Now, the third, they're claiming he's a brother of, right? So they are saying, okay, you have a right to a third of the estate. Okay, so even if you are our brother, it's still true that you get a third of the estate, which is basically a sixth in this case, because we already took half out. So what's left is another sixth. That sixth is basically what they're going to argue about. And therefore, that's all that's left, because we took the first 3/6, which was the half that we conceded. And then we've got another third, which is 2/6. And that leaves us with 1/6 that we're now arguing about. That 1/6 is Maman Amuto B'Suffolk, because nobody was a Muzik in that, and therefore the Suffolk takes half of that sixth, and the Yavam's other two sons, they take the other half. So that means that they end up getting only half of that, which is the 1/12, and because of that, we end up with a curious kind of mix up over here, because the Suffolk ends up, first of all, he ends up with that half, and then he ends up with an additional third, that gives him 5/12, if we look for a common denominator, and then the other split, the rest that's left, of the seventh, each one getting half of that, which is 7/24 per brother, equals the remaining 7/12. Okay, so that means that's all that's left, and they split the moment on Mutal B'Safek. Now, cases G and cases H, what happened over here is that the Suffolk dies. Now, Grandpa and the Yavam have outlived the Suffolk. They want to get the money that the Suffolk has left because he did quite well in life, and they need that cash. I mean, he left behind an amazing estate, and he did not have any children. Okay, so now Saba says, well, here is my grandson from my son who died years ago, meaning the one that everybody said maybe he died without children. No, he died with children. And therefore, I am the only one that gets that, because why should you get anything? Remember how a Yerusha works. The Yerusha will go up to the heir and then come back down again. Well, I'm still here. Hello. And it went through his father, going up to his father's father, going down. Wait, his father's father is me, and I am still alive, and I want it all, because it's all mine. Okay, fair enough, kind of Taina. And the Yavam, of course, says, no, this is my son. I am the only one to get a penny over here, because this boy is your grandson through me, and it never got back up to you. It went up to whoever's first alive. Hello, I'm his father. This cannot be proved. So it's a moment on Mutal B'Safek, and therefore Grandpa and Yavam split equally the estate of this Safek. And it brings us, having gone through all of the beautiful possible variations between Safek ben Shiva and Safek ben Tisha L'Rishon.